What's going on, fam? This is Mateo, aka Lobo. You're tuning into episode 18 of Ascension Radio. Wanted to, as always, thank you guys for the continued support of the podcast. Very appreciative of all the feedback that I've gotten on the last episodes. I know some of you guys really liked the mashup that I did of all 15 episodes that we had before. So what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to start doing 5 episodes and then mashing them together and doing a mix. I know it's a lot easier than switching in between podcasts. If you're listening to it in the car, if you're listening to it, on your way to work or while you work out, definitely going to take that advice and use it for sure. So this episode is actually going to be an episode that my Twitter peoples kind of voted on. I asked on Twitter today what I should make the podcast about, and I got a lot of good suggestions. I'm not ignoring you guys' suggestions. I'm going to use those suggestions for later episodes. But because yesterday, during that ice storm, I was actually able to read or reread one of my favorite books by Don Josue Ruiz called The Wisdom of Shamans, and it reminded me a lot about kind of what started me on this journey. I always find that going back to books that leave us with some type of impact is good because, you know, you learn with experience and you go through experiences that even change your perceptions of what, you know, initially you might have taken from the book. And I find that this book is one of those books that not only serves as a good reminder of things that I've already known and perhaps kind of tucked away into my subconscious, but it's also a good way of refreshing with new discernment and new information, a lot of what is said in those books. And so I came across the book and, one of the sections in that book, again, the book, it's called The Wisdom of the Shamans by Don Josue Ruiz. And in it, he basically breaks down basic tenets of shamanism. And he uses storytelling. So shamans, especially the shamans that I, am familiar with, those of, kind of North, Central, and South America, they always use storytelling as a very powerful tool to get their points across. And by storytelling, I mean they would infuse, in these myths and legends, these lessons that were meant to be conveyed across generations and shared with the tribes that the shamans would be a part of and those that they would try to help heal. And one of the stories speaks about, kind of totems and spirit animals and power objects and the power of infusing our intent into things like that in order to be able to more easily manifest certain energies and work with certain energies. And so I wanted to touch basis on 2 topics today, which is the topic of spirit animals, how they came about, how you can go about finding your spirit animals, as well as developing a relationship with that spirit animal so that you can harness its energy and be able to work with it, whether it be in healing, whether it be in journeying meditations, whether it be in rituals you choose to enact for yourself. These are all ways that you can use the energy of spirit animals to be more effective or to more effectively harness your own energy. And I want to just preface that with a quick reminder that, any tool that we use in spiritual work that isn't coming directly from our inside or from our source or from our connection to the Nahual, it is a tool. And even spirit animals are a tool. This initially comes from you, this connection that you foster with these animals and these connections that you foster with these kind of souls from this other realm, as people like to consider them. Those are just tools in order for you to enact your energy more effectively, to be more direct with your intent and more specific with what it is that you're trying to achieve. So basically, we're just going to hop right in. One of the best things about spirit animals, for sure, for me personally, is being able to envision and kind of package my intent and also direct my energy in exactly the certain ways that I need it done. So For example, a lot of people will believe that you only have one spirit animal. And the truth is, you don't have, there's no limit to how many spirit animals you can have. I mean, there might be one that you resonate heavily with. For example, I have two that I don't really pick which one is my, you know, go-to, because I work with both of them extensively. And that's the wolf and the jaguar. The wolf has been an archetypal energy that has followed me pretty much my entire life. Aside from me loving wolves and thinking that they're one of the most majestic creatures on the planet, you know, my life has been centered a lot around kind of, you know, being between the loner and also being part of that group, part of that pack, and almost finding my voice within that pack, and having to have done that initially through being the lone wolf and through kind of digging through my own shadow to really peel back the layers of domestication or conditioning that had been kind of placed upon me by, you know, just my regular interaction with society prior to my, you know, kind of delving into spiritual work or things like that. And so the jaguar is kind of the same thing with me. It's always been a creature that I found an interesting pull to, but it was definitely something that got spiked once I kind of started studying and practicing with my mentor. You know, he led me to Olmec astrology, and I figured out that I was the Jaguar day sign in that kind of, you know, astrological practice. And so it resonated very heavily with me when I found out that I was the Jaguar in that sign. And, you know, I understood that this, you know, that it wasn't by accident that I had that pull. And when I started doing shamanic journeying, I saw that more often than not, the jaguar was the animal that would greet me, you know, in the kind of journeys into the different realms. And it's actually, so when you do shamanic journeying, there's three kind of places where you can go into. So it's the middle realm, which is the one we exist in now. It's kind of the limbo, per se. We exist in this limbo between the higher realm and the lower realm. And higher and lower realms don't necessarily mean that one of them is holy and the other one is not, or that one of them is full of higher energy and the other one is not. It depends, you know, what you're going to be journeying for, what resonates with you, and where you want to take it. You know, the way that I see it and the way that I was kind of led to understand it is that when you seek some type of higher knowledge or some type of guidance from, you know, the higher self, you would enter the higher realm and meet with your spirit animal in that higher realm, or that spirit guide in that higher realm. And then if you wanted to do kind of soul work or digging into the shadow or more grounded kind of questions, you would go into the lower realms and find those answers there. But again, you know, these are all representations that can be very personalizable. They don't have a distinct, defined, you know, that if you want to find this problem, you need to go into the higher realms. I mean, you know, once you build that relationship with the two realms, you'll be able to discern and understand where you need to go, you know, to solve that particular issue. So for me, you know, the jaguar most often meets me in the higher realms, and the wolf most like, you know, most of the time meets me in those lower realms. And so, you know, for me, the way that was picked, like I said, it was just things that I identified with these animals already. And I also have different animals that I work with that I don't necessarily work with in shamanic journeying, but that I work with on a regular basis. Whenever I feel like I am feeling a little bit closed in, or I feel like that I'm being restricted, you know, I call upon the spirit animal of the eagle or the falcon, because of their ability to kind of take flight and kind of be liberated of any earthly concerns while they're up in flight. You know, when I want wisdom or when I want some type of discernment or an answer about some type of issue that I'm having, I can consult with the owl, whose energy is known to be, you know, wise and kind of all-knowing. So, you know, it's up to you, and an exercise that I definitely encourage for you guys to do is to write down the names of a couple of animals, maybe three or four, that you resonate with just off the get, that you've been pulled to kind of like, or that you feel you have a special connection with, and then list out the qualities that this animal has. Some animals might be a little bit more difficult to pin down in terms of their qualities. Some of them are more obvious. For example, like the chameleon, you know, he's a master, basically a master shapeshifter or a master at camouflage, at blending in. So those are more obvious. But then something like the deer, that's a little bit more difficult to, you know, what do deer do? What are they known for? That's entirely up to you, the meaning you want to put behind it. I normally stray away from telling people to Google, what these things are known for, just because it's more powerful when you put your intent and your understanding into it. However, if you do feel the need that you have a particular pull to an animal, but you have no idea what kind of energy it can embody or what kind of energy you want to place into it, a quick Google search, you'll see most of these animals do have some type of hidden energy representation in the collective. So again, you want to basically list out these animals, and then what you want to do is, from those three or four, start doing meditations where you call upon the energies of these animals, where you envision yourself transforming into these animals and embodying those qualities that you wrote down. And one of the things that I always speak about is being very kind of reverent and gratuitous when it comes to working with energies and tools, simply because of the fact that you are calling upon certain energies that may not be readily available. And so for you to be able to have that gratitude, it opens you up to more ability to channel those things in my opinion. And so once you do that, I've explained already kind of how shamanic journeys work. It's all about practice. When you do begin the shamanic journey, though, I don't want you guys to focus on, okay, I need to see a bear. You want to go in with the intent of finding a guide in these realms and let it present itself to you. So you can have four animals that you resonate heavily with, but then you can have an entirely different animal that meets you in the lower realm or the higher realm that you hadn't thought about. And what you want to take that as is, oftentimes we desire certain things, but the truth behind it might not be necessarily what we desire. And it's important for us to remain open to what source is sending our way. And it's a lot more powerful for us to work with those animals that source gives us as mediators between these upper and lower realms, simply because of the fact that, again, if it came to you, it was for a specific reason. This doesn't mean that you can't work with the four animals that you spoke of. Like I said, I work with the eagle, I work with the owl. I rarely have them appear to me in shamanic journeys, but I work with them on a regular basis. If I need to be nurturing or I know that I'm going to have to be very, very kind of protective, I might work with the energy of a bear, who is very territorial with its family. It's very much so a pack animal in terms of its immediate kind of cubs, and it's very protective of its cubs. And so embodying that energy can help us even almost boost and bolster our own energy in those regards. So, like I said, you write it down, you start doing these journeys to see what it is that source presents to you. If it matches, that's great. If it doesn't, don't be frustrated. Again, the point isn't to impose an animal. The point is to find the animal that finds you through this kind of art of letting go in these shamanic journeys and kind of just seeing what presents itself. One of the things that you want to be wary of, so I've already explained that shamanic journeys, you come in, close your eyes, you get settled, you start breathing, you try to get yourself in a state of a relaxation to the point where you just feel well enough that you can kind of let your mind and imagination take flight. And the way that you enter these portals into the higher and lower realm, I think I've already gone over this, is if it's the lower realm, you want to find an opening, a cave, a kind of in the water, kind of a grotto that you can dive into and go beneath the earth, a hole that you can go into to go into the earth, to these lower realms. And then for the higher realms, you can do something like imagining yourself climbing a tree, a really tall tree that leads up to the heavens, or climbing a mountain that leads up to the heavens, or even using an eagle or a falcon to kind of elevate you up to the heavens and enter these realms. And then once you enter it, kind of just let your mind wander and see what comes up. Don't you know, don't break the journey because something that came up didn't match what you expected. It's all about being open to receiving the messages that you're going to be getting in these journeys. And so spirit animal work in that regard is great because, you know, those are going to be the guides that are going to follow you and kind of you're going to be working with on a constant basis. Once you see what your spirit animal is in each of these realms, you're going to see that it's going to be a recurring theme. That doesn't mean that one day you won't go in there and it'll be a completely different animal. That could just be meaning that source is giving you a message that this animal or this energy will be the best one or the best fit to dealing with whatever issue is that you presented to it in the beginning of the journey. You know, once you finish the journey, I always encourage people, you want to follow your path back, right? So let's say that you ventured into the jungle or you ventured underground, you know, always retrace your steps, just out of respect for the process and respect for the energy that led you there. One, you might see things you didn't notice on the way there that could be also helpful. And two, again, it's about respecting that process and about making it almost ritualistic. So that it can embody truly the energy that you seek to work with. And always thank your spirit animal for working with you. Initially, when you see it, be grateful, express gratitude for its guidance, its future guidance. And then when you leave, again, say goodbye, say thank you, and wholeheartedly, you know, appreciate the energy having reached out to you through that animal. It's very important also to remember that, like I said, these are tools. So don't get lost in the sauce of thinking that you cannot do this because this animal did not present itself to you in this meditation or this or that. You know, inherently, what you're doing is you're infusing the intent into this animal. And so that's what gives it its power. It's the fact that your intent is working in it as a vehicle, and source is kind of driving that vehicle for you so that you can both fuse what is best for you and what's most fitting with what source is intending to do through you and through these animals. So one other thing that we can do when working with these spirit animals is I'm the kind of person that I'm always using my imagination, even in my waking life. So if I'm walking down the street, you know, I like to imagine myself walking with both of my spirit animals. I like to imagine myself with my jaguar on my right and my wolf on my left hand side. And, you know, again, you don't have to sit there and speak to them. You don't have to sit there, but just acknowledging their presence, you can see and you can feel kind of an uplift in your spirit and an uplift in your energy and power. When you walk with these protectors of you, when you walk with these energies that mean something to you, it's a great kind of spiritual practical hack to enhance your experience on a regular basis, to be more in tune with energies and kind of enliven your life a little bit. You know, to practice working with your imagination and enforcing it so that when you do need to use it, it's already kind of been sharpened and it's been there polished, waiting for, you know, for whatever use that you're going to direct it towards. What else? A great way that you can kind of work with others and their spirit animals is kind of understand, you know, where it is that your spirit animal and another person's spirit animal, you know, might clash and where they might come together. These are great ways for you to communicate to somebody, you know, the intent of what you have that you want to be able to come together. And so if your spirit animal, let's say, is a wolf and somebody's spirit animal is a rabbit, that's a good way to see that maybe you guys have clashing ideologies or clashing energies, and it gives an opportunity to reconciliate kind of differences through those archetypes. And it makes it easier. Like I said, it's almost like you're telling a story when you speak about these animals. It's easier for people to understand you. Right. If I tell people that my animal is a wolf, they can very easily understand that I can, you know, be part of a pack, and I can also walk alone. And that, you know, in doing those two things, they can kind of see and understand my wisdom, my power, myself more easily. So don't shy away from, you know, if you have family members, you know, have them do their spirit animal projections and their spirit animal findings, because it's just a good way for us not only to understand our own energy and how we relate to it and how our subconscious relates to it, but also how we can relate with the energies of others. You know, ultimately, like I said, this is a tool in being able to mix your energy with archetypes that already exist so that you can more straightforwardly direct those energies. you know. I had worked with a friend of mine who kind of very much identified himself with the cobra. And he identified himself with the cobra because at early stages in his kind of spiritual development, he was very quick to be angry and then spit kind of venom at people. And he would hurt the ones closest to him with this anger and this venom. And so for him, he related with the cobra because when cobras are younger, or snakes in general, when they're younger and poisonous, they strike unwittingly. They don't strike when they're threatened. They use their venom all the time. They're just learning how to control that. And when he picked the cobra, he was able to work with that energy of the cobra to mature that energy so that he would still have the venom if needed to be used, but it wouldn't be used just whenever and on anybody. You know, he was able to use the energy of that cobra and what we understood of cobras and snakes to almost help himself in his own shadow work and his own dealings. You know, like I spoke about, you know, with the wolf helped me a lot when I kind of came unto my spirituality and I kind of pushed away from the world. I acted as the lone wolf. And then when I finally found my footing, when I found my grounding, it was almost as if the lone wolf had come back into the pack and I had found, you know, that kind of, you know, fitting in to where it was, because I knew my truth now and I knew to speak it. With the jaguar, very similar thing. I always love books on strategy and on kind of guerrilla warfare and tactics and stuff like that. And the, you know, the jaguar is known as the stalker of the jungle. He doesn't, you know, go in and fight immediately from the get. He stalks his prey and looks for the most opportune time to strike. Also, the jaguar is known as the kind of animal that, you know, has connections to higher realms. And so for me, the jaguar was almost like an intermediary between me and my highest self. When I acted as the jaguar through its energy, I felt most connected to my higher self, because it was almost as if I was channeling, you know, the two worlds through that animal. And it was actually a very, very powerful experience to really be able to kind of work with that and understand those energies and how it is that they, you know, that they worked within me and how they played out in my life, and how me projecting it onto this animal was actually me projecting things that I needed to work on, or you know, opportunities that I had to maybe polish my energy and polish my strengths. So again, you know, like I said, a recap, you want to get a couple of animals, sit down, list them out, understand what it is that they embody for you. And then enter into a journey and see if any of these animals come up. If they don't, you know, it's okay. Find which ones do come up and then analyze those as well. I always tell people that it's a good idea for you to take notes after a shamanic journey, just because we don't want to miss out on the information that was given to us. You know, we want to get as much as possible. And so even taking notes on what the animal looked like, what kind of coat it had, was it a big animal? Was it a smaller animal? Was it male or female? All of these things are opportunities for us to be able to infuse our own intention and strengthen those ties with those animals, make it more personalized. Do you have a name? Did you give your spirit animal a name? You know, all of these things are personalizable. And I think that that's one of the appeals that spirit animals have with people. It's that they can kind of project themselves into these animals and see, you know, these animals. The shamans had the utmost respect for nature and animals because they understood that animals didn't have the parasitic brain that we have, with the incessant thoughts and the incessant pulls left and right. They were much more connected to source. You know, there's always stories about how animals can sense impending disasters occurring, or that they have a knowing of certain things happening. And that's because they're tapped directly into source. They're living right then and there with source, and they act instinctively through that source. And so when we tap into those animals, we can almost imagine as if we're creating a space for us to be able to leave our regular mental or the regular mentality that we have of that parasite mind that doesn't allow us to connect with the silence that is source or the Nahual. And through the animal, we're able to much more instinctively act and connect to the Nahual or source or the Great Spirit. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it in terms of the spirit animals. I promised one of my followers I would touch a little bit on something here in this episode. And this is something that, you know, my Latino listeners will probably know very much close to home. I know that the evil eye is pretty much kind of found in every culture, but the mal de ojo is definitely something that you know, the Hispanics know very well, whether you're spiritual, religious or not. That's something that's been understood to be a thing in our culture. And so basically mal de ojo is a kind of spiritual assault that we may have happen to us, and it can come from, you know, the gaze of somebody that might have a powerful gaze who is not aware of their subconscious intent or the negativity they may harbor. Toddlers and children are very prone to this mal de ojo. As we grow to be adults, we're still open to those attacks, but we're less prone to it than what I've seen children and toddlers be. And so basically, it's known across cultures because it's real. I mean, people have a gaze. You know, there's a saying that says that the eyes are the window to the soul, and if the soul is tainted or if the soul has some kind of negativity to it, it can very well transfer that negativity in terms of a spiritual disease or spiritual affliction that can affect people very much physically. So, I've been around children that have had mal de ojo in my own culture, and you know, it manifests as diarrhea, fever. Doctors don't know what it is, vomiting, incessant vomiting, things like that. And so the curanderos or the shamans or the medicine men of these cultures have figured out ways to protect against this. And so what you guys might have seen as the Hamza with the evil eye in the middle, or that little blue kind of circle with what looks like an eye in the middle, that seems to be a very powerful protection, spiritual protection against mal de ojo. So much so that a lot of families in Colombia and in South America and Central America will have these little kind of totems or bracelets with these symbols on them to protect the children from mal de ojo. Once somebody has mal de ojo, a curandero will do one of many techniques to kind of get rid of it. One of the ones that I've seen done by my own guide, and I've seen work, and it was kind of amazing, is you grab a raw egg, and the shaman or the medicine man grabs a raw egg. But you can do this as well if you feel that you're being afflicted by any type of kind of spiritual disease of that level, and you grab the raw egg and you basically keep it, you hover it around your body, right? So it's not touching the body, but you leave it kind of maybe like a centimeter short, and you start at the top of the head and you go around your whole body as if you were raveling yourself up like a mummy, and you kind of just use the whole entirety from fingers to toes, you know, between your legs, between between your armpits and stuff like that. Just make sure you get the whole body. And then once you do that, you kind of crack the egg open in a glass of water. And it's believed that that energy is then transferred into that egg, and then we can get rid of the egg and get rid of that. More extreme cases I've seen, the shamans actually put the egg in a cup of water. And then as the person sleeps, they put it right below their head underneath the bed, and they let that egg sit there. And basically the belief is that through the intention of the shaman, that energy will be drawn into the egg and kind of, alchemized or put into and infused into the egg and away from the person. Once you're done with those things, I would recommend you don't throw it into like your toilet or your sink. I recommend you grab the remainder of the egg and you take it far away from your home, away from other people, and just toss that out. Just to be safe. You don't want that energy to be kind of lingering around your house or anything like that. The egg is known as the giver of life, and you know, the egg and the womb and stuff like that. It has a lot of symbolism in terms of kind of purification or bringing or giving of life. And mal de ojo is basically almost like a curse to take away life, to take away vitality. And so I can see why the egg would have been used in those rituals by these shamans. But yeah, family, that's pretty much it for this episode. I mean, there's not much more I can talk about spirit animals, because I said like I said before, it's pretty much your intent infused into it. And so anything else that I give you would be biased from my opinion and how I've used it before. I could always answer questions on DMs in Twitter or on Instagram. If you want to kind of get a follow up or you want to kind of run something by me in terms of how you've used it or how you think you want to use it or how you've seen people use it, I'm always open to that type of dialogue as well. So again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 18. It's been my pleasure really kind of developing this series with you guys. You know I keep saying that I'm going to have people coming in and speaking on the radio show. I do have 3 people lined up. The thing is that with my schedule with work and school and, you know, coming in, it makes it a little bit difficult. You know, 2 of the people that I want to come in are on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast here in New Jersey. So it makes it a little bit difficult with the time difference as well. But we're definitely going to get that down and get an episode out for you guys where you can kind of hear different perspectives other than the shamanistic path, which is the one that I, you know, resonate with the most, that I've begun practicing heavily over the past year and that I've really kind of taken an apprenticeship in. So again, family, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for listening. All of you guys have a blessed weekend, and I wish you nothing but the best. I say, family.